The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. This is a new era of Red Sox baseball. Through every twist and turn, every major development, we are all on this journey together. This is going to be the most honest Sox podcast you're going to hear. No BS, just the truth. I'm your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from sunny Los Angeles. You can find me on Twitter or X at Smith_MLB. My other hosts for this episode are Jeremy Schilling, coming to us from Boca Raton, Florida, and Terry Cushman, out of witness protection from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Terry, welcome back. Nice to see your face. How are you gents both doing, and where can the fans find you?
I'm doing well. I'm feeling better about things here, and you can find me at JTSchill20 on Twitter.
Terry?
I am doing well. I picked a sweep. I was 75% correct up until what? Three innings of that third game. We led, what's nine times four? Oh, we had extra innings. Never mind.
36 innings.
Something like that. But we led in all but three of them. So anyway, Red Sox taking 3 out of 4 against the White Sox. It was only 1 out of 3 the previous weekend. So got things kind of going on the right track. 13-11. That's good for third place in the American League East. 1.5 games back from the annoying New York Yankees. I can't wait until we get our first series against them. Blue Jays right up above us as well. So, but yeah, just for temperature check, I mean, I'm feeling pretty good. I think the bullpen is kind of our most mortal spot. And I think the manager has done a poor job operating that bullpen. It didn't really hurt us necessarily this series, but that's the area where I'm the most concerned at the moment. Starting pitching was nails.
Jeremy.
My biggest concern is catching the ball and the inconsistent offense that comes with a team that strikes out as much as we do. So the bullpen will figure itself out. Core is not managing games like it's September. I don't want to say load management, but he's managing those arms. You bring Hendricks back and he absolutely implodes. So I'm not concerned with the bullpen yet. So that's where I'm at.
I have some concerns. And for me, it's also like fielding. You can't make as many errors as you're making. The strikeouts are also starting to become a problem, as Jeremy talked about. I am so beyond impressed by the starting rotation. We did have a very lackluster opponent for the last 4-game set. Things are about to get a little bit more interesting over the next 2 series. And then as far as Toronto and New York is concerned, there's a really good chance that after the next couple series, there might be only like a 1-game difference between these 3 teams. That being the New York Yankees, the Toronto Blue Jays, and the Boston Red Sox. The Toronto Blue Jays and the Yankees have a 3-game set. Toronto faces Houston, and then the Yankees face Cleveland. So could be really interesting. I mean, it's a 1.5 game swing right now. But we have every reason to be excited. This team has every reason to perform.
Yeah, I mean, you can't suck against sucky teams, and that's what was happening. And we got the Mariners next. They don't have a really scary offense. I think if our offense shows up, we should be okay. And they're coming all the way out east to play us. And I don't think the Guardians particularly have a scary offense either. And then looking ahead, middle of next week, we get a rematch against the Blue Jays, who we were awful against. I think we won, what, 1 out of 4. So, you know, not a real, we're not going to be facing any juggernaut offenses. If we can just keep our offense on the tracks, you're getting very good production, you know, from most of the guys in your lineup now. We're not going to talk about Jaren Duran tonight, but he did have a hit in every game. You know, I think we're trending in a much better direction.
Well, after a couple of kind of scary disasters that happened in the last series, and I think throughout the year, you need a feel good series. And like you mentioned, you can't do poorly against bad teams. And in one of the games, they blew the doors off. The other two were close, but you still pulled out wins. So, that's really important. At the end of the day, a win is a win. And if you get them, obviously the team that gets the most, it's like a John Madden line, the team who gets the most wins does the best. So it's one of those things where we need to keep trending in that direction. It's really, really important that we keep our foot on the gas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect. So with all due next moves, with our first stud, Terry, why don't you lead us off with who your stud was for this series?
I don't know if this is real life or not, but I have to go with Trevor Story, who I've talked endless SHIT about for most of the season here. Hit a big three-run shot to get the party started against Chicago in game one of the series. A three-run shot off Martin Perez, drove in Devers and Bregman on that. And I don't really like Story hitting in the 4 or 5 spot because, I mean, historically, he just hasn't been very good for the last 4 or 5 years. And he's been injured a lot, obviously, so that's been a factor. But not a guy I want tasked with getting our best hitters across home plate. But he did an extremely effective job of that this series. I forgot to write the actual tallies, so let me do it on the fly here. 7 for 12 on the series. 7 runs batted in. He did hit another home run later on in game one, so that was a 2-home-run game. Drove in a run today in the finale. And
struck out once.
Only struck out once. That's a great observation. And I'd like to see the walks go up there. 0 walks, so we haven't resolved that yet. But hitting .337 on the season and blowing away the expectations.
Jeremy.
Yeah, so the thing that I note is that how much better we are when he's good. I've been watching the Netflix documentary and you hear the things about leadership and, you know, what Bregman's brought this year, the role that Ref Snyder plays, but Story's one of the leaders of this team. I was listening to the radio today and the game actually, and they were talking about him bringing the younger players together in the off season. So he's invested in the roster. He's invested in the team. It sucks when your leader keeps getting hurt. So if he can, or one of your leaders, now that Bregman's there, if he can have a consistent season and stay on the field, he's going to have hot and cold streaks, but he solidifies the up the middle defense, which is so important. I talk about it all the time. And this team will be better with Trevor Story being a productive player as he is right now. He just happens to be absolutely scorching hot. Ton of extra base hits and home runs, clutch hitting. I don't know. I root for the guy. I like him. I know I talk about his injury history because it's there and we kind of have to, but I'm not rooting against Trevor Story, the human being, the individual, the player. I want him to be successful. I want him to perform so that the back end of this contract isn't an eyesore. If he's performing, no one's talking about the money he's making. No one's saying, well, we can't spend elsewhere because we have $22 million each year. We're paying a guy that's not playing. this version of Trevor Story is a ton of fun to watch play baseball. And he's helping you win games. He's directly involving himself in the outcome of games. And we are better when Trevor Story is better.
Absolutely. And to just echo some of the comments that you gents already made, I don't know if he's going to maintain this level of production. I don't anticipate that, right? He's on pace for over 30 homers, 90 RBIs, numbers he hasn't hit since 2019. So we're talking 6 years. He's already matched his total number of home runs as a member of the Red Sox this season in relation to both 2023 and 2024. So he's putting the work in. He hasn't been caught stealing a base this year. The only issue I've had is the throwing, is the errors. It's a little bit of a problem. He had two in the first game, but you got to forgive it. He had two home runs, drove in six. So people aren't going to talk about it. And like Jeremy said, it's a really exciting version of Trevor's story to watch. Committed another error in the series. I believe it was just a total of three. He's hitting 337 so far for the year. He's got an 894 OPS, which is the highest it's been since 2019. Again, I mean, he is a leader on this team. And, you know, I believe it was a week ago that we talked about, you know, what would it look like for another team? If Trevor Story continues this up, it's going to be potentially, sadly, a situation that the Red Sox are going to have to potentially consider. You know, do we keep Trevor Story or do we move him? A team may be willing to pay that contract if he's doing what he's doing right now. And if he stays at this level and or is even able to perhaps take it a step further, maybe a little bit, he's one of the best players on this team right now. He's grossly exceeding expectations in relation to some of the players that haven't done anything this year. He's more than picking up the slack. So yeah, I'm super pumped. It used to be kind of like, oh no, Trevor Story's up at the dish. And now it's like, please, I wish Trevor Story was up in the situation, because he's getting it done. He's doing the job. He's just getting work done. And, I'm okay with the occasional DNP. You know, he didn't play in one of the games for the series. That's okay. If that means that load management's a thing and we're staying healthy, I have no qualms about it, because that means you're able to play for 75% of the series or 5 of 6 games. I don't care. So yeah, super happy that he's doing well.
He had a painful at bat where there was one out, runners on first and second today, hit into the double play, but he did hit the go-ahead run. We were tied at one. He put us up 2-1. We led the rest of the way.
He also won you game one, though. I mean, that's the other thing, too.
No, he did. Yeah.
You know?
And so here's my question, though. You know, we're questioning what's real and what's not and how sustainable things are.
Sure.
But if he's playing, let's just say at an all-star level.
Sure.
Do you get to the point where you can't trade him, where he absolutely has to be in the lineup? Or if there's a suitor, do you have to trade him no matter what?
Jeremy, do you want to go first?
Well, I also believe there's an opt-out at the end of this year, which factors into the answer to this question.
Oh, I don't think he's going to opt out.
I don't, but if he does go 30-90 and there's a market for him, I don't think he'd opt out. And I think the rest of the league is aware of the issues. I don't think there's going to be a trade partner for Trevor Story, regardless of how he plays this year. The injury history is just too much information out there that he's going to eventually. And I say the term breakdown, but that's not what I mean. Cause it's not soft tissue injuries. It's not weird rolled ankles running on a bag. It's like significant injuries. So I don't, you know, it's not like he's soft, because he's not. He's a tough player. He just has bad injuries, like significantly bad injuries. But I would think that this ownership with Marcelo Mayer ready to go would absolutely move the money to get Mayer up at the big league level. And I hate to say it in the moment, you know, 7 for 12, 7 RBIs, big reason why you won 3 of 4 against the Tri Sox, but I would do it. Yeah.
I'm with Jeremy. You know, it would be sad to see him go, but if the goal is to, you know, lower payroll for the foreseeable future, you have to go with the odds of, you know, the history is history. It's not something to forget. And while he's been really available this year, the best ability is availability. And we haven't necessarily seen the best of that for Trevor Story. And injuries could be freak accidents or serious injuries. They've just been really bad, unlucky. If a team is willing to go that route, the Red Sox are not short at short. Like, that's one of the positions we have a lot of depth in. And if there's an opportunity to bring one of those guys up, especially if, you know, hey, we'd like to bring you up, but we are going to need, you know, I think that Marcelo Mayer is going to be a potential candidate for one of those extensions. I think they want to start to get this core together for the next 5-6 years minimum. You know, you're seeing these players sign 6-to-8-year deals that are incredibly team friendly, almost as if they're, you know, like the superstar all-stars of the Atlanta Braves who are signing like 10-year deals for like $50. It's crazy. The Red Sox are starting to do that with some of their players. Now, some of them that had the opportunity to sign that $100+ million deal, that's not happening anymore. I mean, you're playing your way out of a position and potentially get replaced. So, yeah, I mean, if the right team comes a knocking, opt out or not, I think there's a at least a fair chance you have to entertain it that Trevor Story could potentially be playing in a different stadium.
Just looking through the league right now, sure. You know, the Guardians could probably use, you know, a second baseman or a shortstop. Just looking down, I think the Brewers could be a potential suitor at those positions. I would say the Padres, but they didn't spend any money at all this winter. I just think, you know, he plays shortstop. It might not be an easy task to find a dance partner at that position, but he could play second base for a lot of teams. So I think you're probably best case going to end up eating half the money, but I think the Red Sox would see that as a benefit. You got to put Meyer somewhere.
You do. So I'm going to say this.
Name Rafaela as a option.
You know, he's going to be that everyday platoon guy. He could potentially fill in until there's somebody else that goes there. But let me just ask you guys this question. In a league where you have Ellie De La Cruz, Corey Seager, Mookie Betts, Dansby Swanson, CJ Abrams is injured, Bobby Witt, Garrett Henderson. I know I'm missing a couple other names. Philly, Trey Turner. Who amongst those guys do you think has the most home runs and RBIs? And it doesn't have to be the same guy. Who do you think it is of all those names?
Trevor Story has the most
Trevor
RBIs.
Trevor Story actually has the most home runs. The most RBIs is, I think it's Ellie De La Cruz. I could be wrong. But Ellie had like a couple crazy games. Like, remember earlier this year, he had that, he had the torpedo bat. He had the two or three homer, 9 RBI day, and he just absolutely went off. But Trevor Story is leading Major League Baseball at shortstop with the most home runs. That is a statistic that a lot of teams find to be very sexy. If there's a team that loses their main guy, you know, like you mentioned, Cleveland, they don't have the home runs coming there. Xander Bogaerts plays short. He doesn't have any home runs this year. It wouldn't surprise me if San Diego becomes a dance partner. They've got a couple players they also left. Or lost. So there is going to be interest amongst Major League Baseball if he ends up being, you know, one of the first guys with, you know, 10 home runs at his position. If the Red Sox end up having depth, yeah, I'm pretty sure Trevor Story is backing, unfortunately. But yeah.
Well, the question was, would we do it? My answer is yes. I completely disagree with your take that there's going to be a market for him.
Okay, we can revisit that. I mean, I'm happy to. I think.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just my opinion is there's such a consistent history with this player, and the numbers that got him the contract in the first place were in Colorado, which we all know what that means.
Sure, so of course.
There's no track record in the last 4 years for our team to believe that he can continue to do this. I hope he can. He looks like he can.
Yeah, teams are desperate.
People forget that he actually came back last year and was ready to go.
Yeah.
We weren't in it, so they then backed him back down. But, like, for me, he gets all the credit in the world for coming back last year. And he's in tremendous shape. He's come out. He's been one of our most consistent players, top to bottom.
Yeah.
But I say this all the time, Charlie. I know you've heard me say this. It only takes one dumb team. I just don't think with this player, with this contract, the 3 years remaining on the deal, there's going to be a market for him.
And I could be wrong. You know, I mean, I just think that there could be a potential team that gets desperate and they hit the panic button and that ends up having Trevor Story's face on it. Terry, anything you want to
Yeah, I'm just looking. I mean, like I said, we're questioning what real life is with him right now, but one of his better years, I guess his best year was 2018, 37 home runs, 108 driven in. The next year, 35 home runs, only 85. I don't know. If he becomes a 3,100 guy, let's just put that there.
Sure.
I don't know. I mean, that's the best year of his career. I don't think the crazy thing here is you can't really put him in the witness protection program like you have with Yoshida. You can't do it. So you're going to have to find a dance partner. You're probably not going to have a ton of leverage. And I think that's where we're at. But it sounds like, based on the original question, according to the three of us, there's no scenario whatsoever that Trevor Story is untouchable.
No.
No.
No, no.
Okay.
Nope. No.
Well, all right. I mean, it's been fun to watch. I still wince when I see him in the 4 or 5 spot, but he's making it work. He also,
but that's more of a Cassis issue, Terry. That's become necessary only because Cassis is an absolute stop sign right now and is offering you absolutely nothing. And look, I promised myself that I would not come on here and just rip Cassis apart. So I'm not going to do it. If you're listening, you know my position on the player. Trevor Story hitting cleanup is not the preseason plan. That has become necessary because of how bad Cassis is. So that, to me, that's the story. It's Trevor Story being able to say, yeah, I'll go take the pressure of hitting cleanup and delivering should be this. If you want to take it that way, Story's being asked to do something he was told he wasn't going to have to do, and he's thriving. That's my position on that, not to cut you off, sorry.
I think you're a little ways away from Campbell being that guy, but I think Campbell could eventually be that guy.
100%.
So that's one. Abreu could potentially be that guy at times as well, depending on the starting pitcher. So I think there are options, but it's just,
I think Ref Schneider could do it against lefties.
Well, he has for the past few years. So
yeah, there's options there.
Yeah, we'll see.
Jeremy, who was your stud for the series?
Rob Refschneider. 4 for 8, 2 RBIs. One of them was a home run in the finale that got us back even and kind of started the offense for a very, very, very brief period of time. Capable defender. He's hitting 350 on the year. He doesn't have a ton of at-bats. I think he scored 3 runs, the home run today. But he's been pretty steady in a limited role for the last 4 years for the Red Sox. I've always liked the player. Again, you know, we found out last year that he is one of the leaders of the team. And my next comment is not like if we get to October, he's going to still be doing it. All right. And the tweet came from the Bastards account. So this is Terry's take. I totally agree with it. Can we put Ref Schneider over there, even if it's for the next 5 games, and get Cassis out of the lineup? Because for those that he believe he's going to be a 3,100, and you know who you are, every single one of people tweeting at me. All right. He needs a reset. He is absolutely lost. He's talking to himself. He looks like he lost his puppy in the dugout. Like I feel bad for the player mentally. He has to be completely just a lost baseball player right now. And I'm not saying do some crazy thing, promote somebody that, you know, shouldn't be there. Find a solution at the big league level, even if it's just for the Rays series. I'm sorry, the Seattle series. Please. Find a solution. And I don't know if it's Abreu at first and Ref Schneider plays right, or Ref Schneider goes and plays first base, or Romy Gonzalez. There has to be something. Cassis going 0-for-4 with 2 punchouts every single night and dropping a ball every 3rd or 4th game can't be the answer. Give the guy a mental break. I mean, I think it's, if you just plug him in the lineup tomorrow, it's like what you're just expecting the same. You should just expect the same result is what I'm trying to say. It's something has to happen there. Ref Schneider's swinging it right now. Maybe it's him. One of the reasons why I picked Ref Schneider is because I wanted to discuss this topic a little bit.
So the one thing I love about Rob Ref Schneider is when he hit that, what ended up being the game tying home run, the team just gets fired up behind him. He's literally the spark that lights this team. And we saw what happened. And he's good in the outfield. I advocated for him playing first base. A lot of people don't realize, especially that one hater on Twitter earlier. For the first 4 years of his career, largely, he was a first baseman. So he can do it. I mean, you don't have a ton of options at first base right now. I mean, you've got Romy that can do it. And I like Romy Gonzalez, but I like Rob Ref Schneider more. And he puts the ball in play. They say, you know, the term that gets used with him on social media is he's a professional hitter. A very small sample size. He's only played, today was his 9th game of the season. But he's hitting 350 right now with a 381 on base. That's about what he was hitting for the first 2-3 months of the season last year. And it did come down to earth a little bit. By the end of the year, he hit 283 with a 359 on base. And he had an 830 OPS, about 100 points higher than league average, 110 points actually. An OPS plus of 130. At the moment, it's 137. This guy is a bona fide lefty killer, as has been mentioned ad nauseum by several content creators, journalists, what have you. And, you know, it's not a trend anymore. It's who he is. That's what he does against lefties. And maybe he's not an everyday player, but I think he should be utilized a little bit more. And at this point, automatically, if there is a lefty in there, he should start the game. He should pinch hit, you know, late in games. And I just, good things happen when Rob Ref Schneider is in the baseball game.
Yeah, I mean, this is someone who gets a limited sample size as far as opportunity goes, and he makes the most of it. The last professional hitter that I can remember people referring to on a regular basis or on a consistent basis was Justin Turner, who is widely regarded as one of the better professional hitters, at least was. Obviously, he's gotten pretty old as of late, but had one of his best statistical years as a member of the Boston Red Sox and, you know, left and got his money after because we didn't want to renegotiate. He got a pretty nice opt-out package, but I don't think the Red Sox give the word leader as a title very easily. And I don't think it's something that they ever take for granted. It's also not something that I think certain players will ever be able to carry regardless of their ability. So Tristan Casas could potentially be, you know, a power hitter maybe in the future. He's got to hit for power. I don't know if anyone would ever be able to look at him and say he's the leader that this team needs. Rob Ref Schneider can fill that gap. And as you mentioned, against lefties, he gets the job done. I don't ever find myself booing Rob Ref Schneider. I do find myself going, oh boy, when Casas comes up to the plate. For multiple reasons that Jeremy had already brought up. You can't continue to, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome. That's basically what we're doing. And with, you know, to Jeremy's point, he does need a mental day or mental days. I mean, there were players that used to get, what was it, Terry? You said that, you mentioned this years ago. Xander Bogaerts would get a day off after a day off. He wouldn't play the game after an off day or something like that. It was really frustrating that Alex Cora would do that with Xander. He would rest him. It was just kind of frustrating. Tristan Casas needs a couple days. He really does. It's really, it's hard to watch him play now. It's not, It's not a fun experience. It's hard for the fans. It's hard for the team. And I think above all else, it's hard for him because he knows he's not able to deliver right now. One home run, a couple of RBIs and hitting under 200. That's not going to get the job done.
So the last thing I'll say about this is there's only one way for Casas to really positively impact the baseball game, and that's by driving the ball. Ref Schneider is just, he can affect the game in different ways. This is a topic I talk about a lot. He's not the best base runner. He's not a base stealing threat, but he can go first to third. Casas can't. He can score on a base hit to left. Casas can't. He can leg out a topped ground ball and make it a base hit. Casas cannot. As long as he can catch the ball at first base while Casas is not driving the ball, he just provides more upside to positively influence the game. I mean, that's it. Casas needs to be driving the ball off the wall, doubles, and it's not going to happen like a light switch here, guys. There has to be a progression, and I think you start that progression by just backing off for a few days, and you may even tell him to stay away from the ballpark for a day. You know, but hey, come if you want to prepare, prepare. You're not going to play. You're not going to pinch hit. You're certainly not going to be a defensive replacement. Just, and they did this with Duran last week, and now he's starting to heat up a little bit. He's starting to get back to where he was. So it's just time. The writing's on the wall. I'd be shocked if he's in the lineup tomorrow, but Cora follows his game plan to a T.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else you want to add, Terry?
No. You know, I just think I'd like to see him more as well. And yeah. I think when he's on the field, it has, I don't want to say a profound impact, but a very positive impact on all the other players around him.
Absolutely. That is going to bring us to our third stud, and I get to pick who I thought was going to win the Cy Young last year, and that's Garrett Crochet. I mean, this guy was absolutely electric in this series. Granted, a little bit of a revenge game, only allowed 4 hits over 6 innings, struck out 7, a pair of walks. Absolutely locked in. It's the second straight game against his former team. He struck out 11 over 7 1/3, only had one blip. You know, that was it. Just the one run on one hit. That's it. This guy has a 0.67 ERA with 31 punchouts in 27 innings. This is insane. And it's insane to think that in 4 games of a 0.67 ERA, he's 2-1. No decision in this game. And it was really hard because I do remember a couple games when Chris Sale was with us against Toronto. There was one game. I think Chicago was another one. We just didn't give him any runs. I think combined, he got one run and he got 2 no decisions because we just didn't give him the run support. So Garrett Crochet is going to continue pitching like he's baseball Jesus, and I love every second of it. If I'm the opposing team, I know I'm probably going to strike out at least once a night. The odds are forever not in my favor. But really happy that Crochet is here, and my God, man, when it just, you can see what happens to a team when you have an elite number one. You have one of the best pitchers in baseball on your team. Terry.
When Nick made his pick in the series predictions episode, he said there's not going to be many games that I pick against Garrett Crochet. And certainly you're not going to do it against the worst team in baseball, but he's fun to watch. The only thing I'd like to see, he doesn't really get fired up. He just quietly and professionally goes about his business and assassinates whoever's in the batter's box.
I'm okay with that.
You'll take that. You'll absolutely take that. But I just hope in some way he does kind of endear himself to Red Sox fans, and he's got the next 6 years to do that. John Lester did it, you know, kind of in his own way. And, you know, he was a guy we all loved. And quite frankly, I mean, I don't think the Red Sox do enough to commemorate him. Today we had Johnny Gomes in the booth. You know, you don't see John Lester around. And
right.
I don't know if there's any hurt feelings from ownership on that. But Crochet's been fun to watch. It probably will get more fun and more interesting as we play, you know, the Yankees and, you know, some of the bigger teams when the Astros come to town. And all of them. And then in the postseason, maybe we'll finally have that mystique. Most casual fans of Major League Baseball don't know who Garrett Crochet is. Red Sox fans know him because we needed an ace and we knew Chicago had one. And he was just kind of on our radar. And I don't know what the Cy Young race is looking like right now. We haven't really seen double-digit punch-out games from him yet. I think those will come as the season progresses. But it's extremely reassuring that you know every fifth day. You don't quite have an automatic W, but you can tentatively pencil it in. And it's been fun.
I mean, I think in the American League, the pitchers that are up there on the list, you have Garrett Crochet, obviously. Max Fried has also been doing very, very well. He's got 4 wins. He's got a sub-2 ERA. Garrett Crochet has a 1.13 ERA. I mean, that's just stupid. If he's not number one, I'd be shocked. Evaldi's also done well. Gausman's done okay. National League has a boatload of players that have been doing insane. I say this, I know I sound like a Dodgers fan. I'm not. Yamamoto has a 0.93 ERA. I was just talking about this with somebody else. It's not going to stay there. It's obviously going to go up by a little bit here, but you know, you're in a league with him. Paul Skeens is there. Pavetta's there. Pavetta's also like pitching out of his mind right now. Have you guys seen his numbers?
I've seen a couple of really good starts. I have him up now, actually. He's 1.57 ERA.
He's doing really well. He's doing
his
very,
whip
very
is
well.
Low, and it always was because he's never been a guy that walks a ton of people. So opponents only hitting 175 against him. But I think we know what's going to happen with Pavetta. And if he proves me wrong, then so be it. But right now, getting back to Crochet, though, 10th. In MLB in strikeouts. That's all of MLB. So where would that be? Yankees. Wow, that would be, he'd be 4th in the American League. Real quick, you mentioned Max Fried. Did you hear about what happened to him this weekend?
Oh yeah, big thing. Yeah, he had a
no-hitter going, and there was a play that was ruled an error. So it gets ruled an error. The game continues. And then all of a sudden he looks up at the scoreboard. The error was taken away and it was now a hit. So he lost his no hitter like 20 minutes after the fact. And then promptly gave up a legitimate hit after that. But there was a ball hit at the second baseman. It wasn't fielded right. But the base runner on the replay clearly was going to win the race to the bag, you know, versus the pitcher had the play been made. So it was going to be a hit. So it was absolutely the correct call, but it's right. The most awkward way in Major League Baseball history to find out you lost your no hitter.
Yeah, no. So they talked about the guy who broke up the no hitter was Chandler Simpson, who got elevated to the Major League roster for the Rays. And he's insane fast, like dumb fast. And so I think it was in the 6th inning that it happened. And then it was either in the 7th or I think it was the 8th inning, he lost the no-hit bit for the second time. Yeah, and he was confused. And Boone came out and said later that, you know, this can't happen. It's really sloppy. And looking back at the replay, it looks like it should have been ruled a hit to begin with. So it was like this false sense of reality that was created for the Yankees. But it's Max Fried. The guy got the bag thrown at him, and he's going to absolutely shove this year. So yeah, at the end of the day, he's going to do something like this again, at least once this year. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's able to get close. No surprise. That one and then the
Judge
Padres
home run?
Did you see the Padres one? That was scary. Luis Arraez ended up colliding with Mauricio Dubon, and that was bad. He lights out on the field.
Concussion protocol now, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so he left and then ended up joining the team after for the win, but we're kind of getting a little bit off topic. Very wonky indeed. Anything else you guys want to add on Crochet? Well, the number one stud, I think we did not have listed in our group, Walker Buehler, man. Walker Buehler absolutely went off. 9 strikeouts. I think it was 6 or 7 innings of war. Only allowed one. Yeah. He allowed 1 earned run. Absolutely hauled. my dog is trying to get into the room. So yeah, I mean, this is why you give this guy 20 plus million to come be here. You lose Pivetta, who's absolutely lighting it up, and you upgrade with Walker Buehler. I'm okay with it. I love Walker Buehler's presence in the clubhouse. This is a guy who has World Series championship pedigree. We're not hurting. So super happy he was here. Anything else you guys want to add for him specifically?
Yeah, I mean, he was the number two guy that I wanted. You needed a one and you needed a two, and I had him slotted into the two hole. I wouldn't have been happy if we put all the eggs in his basket and he came in as the number one, but it worked out perfectly. And he got off to a rough start, but he's really, really reined it in. The strikeouts have ticked up. He's going deeper in the games. The ERA is coming down to earth. It was 8 or 9 something. Now it's like 4.93. Doesn't look great on paper, but it's trending sharply the right way. And I put the Boston Red Sox in the World Series. You don't get there without Walker Buehler being your number two pitcher. It just doesn't happen. So when he got off to that bad start, I'm thinking, man, how do you get there? I mean, it's nice to see Richard Fitz pitching well and a couple other guys that have been getting spot starts, but you need Walker Buehler to be essentially Walker Buehler. And, you know, he's throws a lot of sliders. I think he's been messing with a sinker and kind of, I guess, reinventing himself in a way. And 31 years old, man, I'm so excited that he's on the Boston Red Sox. I picked him to win the Cy Young probably 2 or 3 times. He never did. I mean, he had some great seasons. He's historically been a great postseason pitcher, which is what we're going to need if we get there. But to see him go 7 innings today, 9 Ks, I don't know if we've had anyone hit 10 strikeouts yet off the top of my head, but
Crochet. Yeah, he struck out 11 against Chicago in his last start. He only allowed one run, one hit, and he went 7-3, struck out 11. I do believe he's the only one that I can remember.
That was the no-hitter game for a while. It was a no-hitter.
It was wild. Yeah. It was a really good game.
I forgot about that. But anyway, yeah, I'm really thrilled to see it. I keep telling myself, I'm like, Walker Buehler is on the Boston Red Sox. That's just so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I like the player. When he started slow, I took the position. I wasn't worried about him. He's in a contract year. He's going to pitch well. And I expect him, you know, 2 or 3 is, you know, I don't know if we need to get into an argument about where he slots in. He's going to be starting playoff games for you if we get there.
Absolutely. Are there any other players that you guys want to specifically shout out in the series?
Campbell was 5 for 13.
Yeah, Campbell
did great. He also added a couple, 3 walks. So he was on base 8 times in the series.
All 4 games, actually.
All 4 games. I think that I saw during today, he's played in 22 games. He's been on base at least once in 21 of them.
Yeah. So he's also hitting over 300 on the year. Like, The Angels have a guy who rose the ranks, kind of like the Rangers, Wyatt Langford, who just blew through the minors. They had a guy who they drafted that year, Nolan Schanuel.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Zach Neto.
No, Zach Neto is the shortstop, but Nolan Schanuel had like a crazy on base like streak, like most consistent games where he had been on base in a row to start a major league season, or there was a weird stat where they were reading it for him, and he's not going to blow anyone away with home runs or crazy batting average, but he draws a lot of walks and has incredible plate discipline. And that's something that we can't discount for Christian Campbell, who has 14 walks. He does have 21 strikeouts. So he's striking out, you know, between 3 and 4 times every at bat, but you're drawing 14 walks. You're drawing a walk, you know, 2 walks every 3 games. I'll take that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Devers, 2 for 10, which does not sound great, but he did draw 6 walks and had a very pivotal 3-run homer in the second game of the series. So seeing the ball really well, I'd like to see him obviously, you know, driving it more, but we'll take that. Jaron Duran had a hit in every game. The one guy I want to really give props to, though, Hunter Dobbins. Six yes. innings pitched, only three hits, walked none, struck out six. His one home run, I think that was a solo shot, if I'm not mistaken. But really good. If you pull up his Baseball Savant page, lots of red. Just tons of red on that page. It's mostly with his off-speed stuff. So if he can get some life on his fastball, who knows what the ceiling is with this guy. But I'm intrigued, and I'm going to put him ahead of Newcomb at this point on the depth chart. If there's an odd man out, I want it to be Newcomb. Bayo's going to be back this week. He's pitched okay in the minors.
Right.
Lucas yep. Giolito says he's ready. The dude's been a mess. Just walking a ton of people, giving up runs. I don't know. But Dobbins has been fun. And Fitz is actually closer to being back. So throwing the ball. I mean, he's going to need one or two rehab starts. But
well, as far as Dobbins is concerned, like, we weren't sure what to expect from him. And he ended up pitching in the game. He pitched in the blowout St. Louis game. And we thought, okay, cool. He's going to do well. This is a game where he's got obviously a boatload of run support. And then with Chicago, this is going to be a game where, you know, he shouldn't do poorly. It's Chicago. They're not intimidating. They only have a couple wins on the season. And aren't they the worst team in baseball right now, as far as record is concerned? Aren't they like 4-14 or 4-15 or something?
I think it's five now. Yeah.
They're so bad. They're so bad.
Yeah. It's more of the same.
Yep. Anything else that you want to add, Jeremy? Cool. All right. So let's bring it in over to our duds. Terry. Wow. I just combined both of your names. Terry, who did you have as your dud? Terry. Wow.
I am going to go with Martin Perez, who pitched very well in the first series last weekend, but this weekend, not so much. As I covered, Trevor Story kind of buried him. You know, put up three of the five runs that Perez gave up. It was a much different outing. And, you know, I can see why the White Sox would bring in a guy like Perez. He'll eat up some innings. You know, you won't be blowing out other people's arms by having an innings eater like him in. But man, I can't think of a more mediocre pitcher that hung around for as many years as Perez has. You know, he's typically not a bad first half of the year pitcher, but things come to a screeching halt. I mean, I remember he was with us in 2021 and had a great start. I mean, he was a big reason why we had that good first half. I mean, we led the division for most of the year, and then second half of the season came around and he didn't even make the rotation in the postseason. He was pitching out of the pen and mostly in cleanup duty and kind of bounced around. He signed like a $9 million deal last year with the Pirates, which kind of surprised me. But now here he is with the White Sox, probably at the very end of his career. And the Red Sox tuned him up pretty good this time.
Yeah. Jeremy?
I had him as my stud last time, and I was commenting on how I couldn't understand how he was finding success because of where his stuff is, where he had was at in his career. And I know he's a very likable player, but I'm sure he provides some leadership, veteran leadership on a very young roster that's trying to find their way. But this is what I expect when Martin Perez pitches, what happened in this series. So that's all I'd add.
Yeah, not much to add on top of that. I mean, this was one of the more frustrating guys that we had on our team. And when he left, it was, kind of, all right, cool. He's not going to go anywhere. Nothing's going to happen with him. And since he did leave the Red Sox, he was actually able to put together a couple of decent campaigns, that being 2022. Even 2024, he didn't do too badly. Like, he pitched for Pittsburgh, got moved to San Diego, had a sub-4 ERA, but the year right after he left us, it was really frustrating because he looked like he turned the clock back and was able to almost hit 200 innings. He pitched exactly where I thought he was going to pitch, poorly, you know, not get the job done. And just be a pitcher. Nothing special. Jeremy, who did you have for your dud?
Bobby Dalbec. And the one thing I'll say about Bobby Dalbec is he is consistent. His numbers are exactly as you would expect when he was a Red Sox. I think he's hitting like 169. He hasn't played a bunch. It's unbelievable. He might have just got called up, but I was looking at his numbers and it's insane how consistent this player is. The one thing I will say though, and why I named him is I've always rooted for him, and the best thing that could happen to him is get a bunch of at bats on a team going in absolutely no direction whatsoever and try to find a career out of it. So I'm rooting for the player. It's just I was surprised to see him in the big leagues. I guess I shouldn't be if it was on the White Sox, but kind of the same old story with Bobby Dalbec.
Terry.
Wait, which team does he play for? Is he our first baseman? I forget. You guys are no selling my joke, but so with the White Sox, I mean, we got the first base right now. We may as well, for the Red Sox, we may as well name it the Bobby Dalbec Factory. that's what's going on there.
And brutal.
He's such a likable person. I wish Tristan Casas was as likable as Bobby Dalbec, but he's just not. And Dalbec is trying to make it work right now for the White Sox, trying to make it salvage his career. I think he honestly has to go overseas. You know, others have talked about it. That's not a unique take. Send him to Japan, Korea. The dude would be a god over there. But you know, the last stop for anybody's career for the next 3 or 4 years would be the White Sox. And if you can't make it there, if you can't stay in that lineup, you got to do something else with your life, man. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about it. Back in 2021, he was a 25 home run guy, played 130 plus games, hit a little 250, excuse me. Struck out a lot. Like that was his big problem. Like a lot of strikeouts. And we thought, okay, cool. 4 years ago, 25, we haven't hit our peak. He'll get better. And then the numbers went down. And then they went down again. And it was just, he was out of baseball in 2 years. I mean, he flamed out. People figured him out. 100 less at bats, almost the same number of strikeouts. Like that's not good for baseball. And then last year he struck out more than half of his at bats. You can't do that and expect to be here. So yeah, good luck to him across the pond. He could be a god there. You know, if he plays in Japan or Korea, the guy, or Mexico, who knows? I mean, the guy's going to be an absolute stud there. Just it wasn't meant to be in Major League Baseball. Anything else we want to add on Bobby D? So my dud for this series is Andrew Vaughn. Andrew Vaughn was relevant in only one game here. Scored one run, obviously, in the home run that he had in the third game of the series. But outside of that, only a couple of hits, a lot of strikeouts, 4 strikeouts in this one. We just was not getting a lot of good contact in the game. And the issue with Vaughn is that they're really depending on him to be the, you know, superstar of this team because it's so full of, you know, I don't want to say bad players, but I mean, this is someone who's really never had his career take off the way that everyone thought it would. In the last 3 years, you've just seen the numbers just completely tank. His batting average just kept going down over the last 4 years. You're seeing just everything, he's just not making the best contact right now. And his batting average is almost 100 average points lower this year. And he's, you know, striking out about a 25% clip, which is not crazy, but it is higher than what it was last year. So he's got to make some adjustments here because this isn't going to cut it for Chicago. But I mean, there are very limited options. You know, they don't have the depth that some teams do. Chicago, honestly, if I'm a Chicago fan, I wouldn't buy the tickets. I would have the sell the team sign go up because I'm sure there's going to be some Chicago billionaires willing to buy this team. Because what you're seeing right now is below an inferior product. I don't think the Chicago White Sox could compete against some AAA teams. They're that bad. And Andrew Vaughn is not helping that situation. Terry.
not much to add. I mean, as sad as it sounds, I mean, how many players are better on that team? Luis Robert, obviously, when he's healthy. It's just not a good baseball team.
Yeah, Luis Roberts is another good player for my next very brief comment. This player's averaged 19 home runs and 75 RBIs a year in the preceding 3 years. I always wonder with guys like that on absolute dumpster fires, if you go put them in a good lineup, what they could do. You know, this team stinks offensively.
They're so bad.
They're so bad. And, you know, you have two guys like that that do have some ability, and no one's protecting them. No one's getting on base in front of them. And it's, you know, so I don't know much about the player. I just commented on those stats as I reviewed them. So that's all I have.
They're the worst team in baseball last year. They lost off 120 games last year, and they're already on pace to do that again this year.
I mean, they're going to do it again this year. They stink.
They're so bad. I mean, if what the owners are, I mean, their win percentage is under 200 right now. Their win percentage last year in relation to this year was 253. They're at 190 right now. They will exceed the 120 losses of 2024. They're that crap. So yeah, I'm all good with the you know, White Sox. If we ever play them, you know, every time, Terry, I don't blame you for picking sweep. I would have picked sweep too. They're awful. Anything else we want to add for that one?
Nope.
That is going to do it for the Bastards. Everyone have a great one. Take care.